The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company.
Every week, your Bengals beat writers, fantasy football failure Fletcher Page and Paul Dana Jr. take you inside Paul Brown Stadium.
We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, I'm always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewing Company. Blainer Jr., here with my man Fletcher Page. We're your Bengals beat writers. We're going at it. One show this week. Just one.
Just going to cram it all into one block.
We're shoving it all in. No BBP with the holidays. No Deuce with the holidays. So everybody's clear. We got a lot to get to. We got to talk about how to fix the offense. We got to talk about Marv's seat potentially heating up as we look down the stretch. We got some PFF for you with Austin Gale. I felt we had to bring in Optimistic Bobby this week. He was needed. So I've got some Optimistic Bobby for everybody. Marv's going to get mad at the taters. He doesn't like the taters. The Auden taters.
Oh, I see.
You're the tater. So Marv fires off at my question about Auden Tate. Twitter doesn't take it well. We're going to talk about the defense, their epic inability to stop the run. Hugh! He's here. Hugh's. Everyone's been yelling for Hugh this week, right? I need your Browns info, Hugh! I need your Browns info! It's where we're at. It's where we're at with it. I want to update the Jurassic Park analogy. I feel that we've taken another step.
It's getting stronger.
It's getting stronger as more people get eaten by the dinosaurs. We'll get to today and Kanye. And you should all be reminded that Fletcher is a terrible fantasy football player, and that's why he was made fun of in the Open this week. We played each other in our league that we happen to be in together, and it was just a giant ass kicking, and I'm pretty happy about that.
It was, and it was a moment, too, because I was previously in the playoffs. You weren't, and we flipped now. You're in, and I'm out.
And I stole Drew Brees from you in the draft, and now that turns out to be a very good thing for me and bad for you.
Well,
Who's your quarterback?
Matthew Stafford,
that's right. All right, let's talk Bengals. Fixing the offense, let's start there. So, I'll just say this and you can start. Is it as simple as 18 rolls in with his Superman cape on and everything comes back together?
I just dropped the mic.
You did. Before really you said anything. That's not how that works. Yeah. You drop the mic after you say the great thing, not before.
Can't flub if you don't have the mic in your hand.
You're right. I'll ask again. Is it as simple as 18 coming in with the Superman cape on?
I think so. I think that if a lot of the issues that you could point to, like can't run the ball or nobody else is consistently getting open, I think AJ alleviates a lot of that. And so, like, I was digging into some numbers yesterday because I had a little bit of time after we get off the plane. It's just so hard. Like, I was trying to draw conclusions. Like, I looked at Andy Dalton's first five games, his last five games, And every time I started to address the why or like why, what, it was like, well, it's just without AJ. Didn't have AJ for this period of time.
Right. And, you know, as other injuries propped up around him as well, I mean, you had games without Gio. You had, obviously, the tight end disasters.
Right.
For some of those games in the last five, he was shoving it into AJ too much, probably. Mm-hmm. Your hope is that when he comes back, the ripple effect clears up Tyler Boyd, who I think, you know, in the long run, this stretch was good for him to have to be looked at as the man. And, you know, he talked about it a little bit after the game, but I think there's a lot of truth to it. Having to fight through double teams, see those kind of crazy coverages, and get used to that, because then you go back to that not being something you see all the time, and there's a trust factor that takes the next step. And John Ross making the play that he did on Sunday helps, too. Where he's your third option. You feel better about it, and you're not having to put freaking Cody Core out there anymore.
I was
going to
see how long we can make it. But the point is on that 4th-and-3, Tyler Boyd was doubled. Andy Dalton did the right thing with the football. It just it ended up going to Cody Core instead of perhaps – if AJ's out there, it's Boyd or Ross in that situation.
Right. I mean, that's where they are with that. I don't. There's a lot of ripping them for the struggling of the running game on Sunday, and it's just. I mean, you know, when Gio and Joe Mixon go 14 for 19, like you're not going to win like that, and. It doesn't, you know, and they stack boxes. They have giant, massive men in the middle that are disruptive for, I mean, Michael Pierce, Brandon Williams, like, they are tough. And Billy Price wasn't the greatest. Some of their, you know, Cordy Glenn had a rough day on the edge. They just weren't effective in the run game. They weren't able to move anything. You know, when you can't do that, you need to win those one-on-ones. And the Ravens knew it. The Ravens knew they couldn't. They could not win enough with those other guys without AJ. And I don't know how many other teams on their schedule, though, can take advantage of that. Denver?
Yeah, I mean, Cleveland's defense isn't.
Is okay.
Isn't terrible.
It's okay. I mean, they've had games where they've given up a whole lot of points. They've got some guys that can rush the passer, but I mean, you know, they're not the Ravens or anything like that. And with AJ back, you'd like to think that you can get things kicked up again. I mean, really, you worry about putting too much pressure on a guy when he comes back like this. But if anybody can handle it, I would never put that cape on Tez. I would never, and I've warned people not to do that who wanted to do that after the first quarter of the season this year. I would put that cape on 18. He can handle it. He's a cape-wearing fool. Yeah, wearer of capes.
I think that last drive, and it's still, you know, Bill Lazor said that Andy Dalton came in on Monday, and despite everything, not being able to run the ball and then having to make the decision between Auden Tate or Cody Core, the most important play of the game, Andy stood up and said, like, still felt like we were going to win the game.
Yeah.
After they made that first completion and you get rolling. And then, you know.
I think everybody did. It looked like it. It looked like that's what it was going to be. The bottom line is this just puts them – they're just in such a spot now. I mean, you look at, you know, the big picture of the Colts at 5-5 look dangerous as hell right now. Their offensive line is good. Andrew Luck is playing his butt off. They look like a really good team. Their defense is starting to come together a little bit. The Colts, if you're looking at who of those teams could break through, certainly. The Ravens currently hold the sixth spot. They've got a schedule that's fairly similar to what the Bengals are. The Bengals are not catching the Steelers. They're just not. I think that game on Sunday night put that out of reach. You know, Tennessee is still – there's just so many teams in play. They, you know, you get to the point where you wonder, you know, is 9-7 going to be enough? Now, inevitably, Nine. There were probably a couple teams at 9-7 in a tiebreaker with each other. But the loss to the Ravens hurts them in that capacity, potentially. You know, they have beat the Colts, but and the Browns are not a. You play them twice, and they're not a great matchup because of the way this team has struggled to stop the run. There's just it turned into such an uphill battle because of that Ravens game.
No, I think we're going to look back at this game a month from now, and specifically, we're going to look back to the third quarter when the Bengals are winning 21-13 mm-hmm. and the Steelers are losing 16-0. So real time at that moment, the Bengals are tied in the win column with the Steelers.
Yeah,
if those hold,
they're about to be right there.
Right. Now they're one game ahead of the Browns in the loss column. That's right. Where it went. So I think whenever it all plays out, and if it plays out the way I think it will, I think we're going to be looking back to that third quarter moment.
The most critical half hour of real time
right.
in the entire season probably happened on Sunday when both those scores flipped dramatically. Okay, I want to talk about Auden Tate. And you know, with AJ coming back, this is less of a thing. And Josh Malone's status is more uncertain. I'm not going to get any injuries right now because it's strictly going to be speculation. Outside of, we're pretty sure AJ will probably be back Sunday. So whether Auden Tate, we may not see him again.
Right.
He's played 8 snaps this season. It came to the forefront because of Cody Core. Like, why is Cody Core playing over Auden Tate, who at the very least can catch the ball? And go listen to the walkout. I have a very passionate rant about this case.
I give it an A-.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't
quite Dez rant worthy.
No. Yeah. No. But it's like, it's just one of those things that is, Auden Tate played the first third down. It's interesting for a guy to play on the first third down of the game and never see it again. He did not run his route to
deep
quote path. The design of the route, according to Marvin Lewis, and he came a yard short of getting the first down and then never saw the field again.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when Cody Core has the game that he has, everyone says, "Why aren't you just giving somebody else a chance? We know who Cody Core is." And so, and I understand, in Auden Tate, there is obviously he has fans in the front office. Obviously, or else he wouldn't be here. They wouldn't have done the roster gymnastics they did to keep him on the roster at the 53 cut, jeopardizing Michael Johnson just basically to keep Auden Tate and guys like Mason Schreck around. And they wouldn't have kept him this whole time when they had other, they could, and then they sort of had to release him, which I don't think was something the front office wanted to do. But so obviously he has fans in there, and the refusal to even give him a chance with the entire room banged up and to be victim of a drop, why? So why has he only played 8 snaps? Why has he not been given any kind of a chance? So I asked Marvin Lewis. And let's just say it was 2 hands on the back, and the bus went over. The bus might have backed up, actually, too, afterwards.
Did.
Here's Marvin Lewis on why Auden Tate has not been playing.
Particularly the last 2 weeks with the receiver room being as banged up as it's been, how come Auden Tate hasn't been able to get out there more? Is that just...
Oh, well, he get there when he gets his opportunity, when the time comes, it's his involvement in the offense is what it is. It's a guy who's been on the practice squad for a reason, okay? So he's been a free agent for all 32 to take a look at. You see what I'm saying? So, yeah. So it is what it is. You're not going to, you know, many times you're going to go take a guy off the practice squad and go win an NFL game with, okay?
In his one opportunity yesterday, did he run the route correctly?
He didn't get the depth, if that's what you're asking.
So he ran it short of the sticks and you all went away from it.
Well, it's not short of the sticks. It's short of the design of the route, okay? And last week he dropped the ball in his one opportunity, you know? So, again, you know, we just got to keep going. Auden's a young player. He's got some ability. Hopefully he'll make some plays if he continues to get an opportunity down the stretch here for us.
Now, I will say this in Marvin's defense. You know, he is a seventh-round pick. Yes, nobody wanted him when he went through. Maybe there's some sort of indication that I don't know. However, he can catch the ball fairly well. You know, so I get, like, we're just going to give Cody Core a chance. We're going to keep giving him chances. I just feel like at a certain point, how does Cody Core get all those chances and Auden Tate doesn't even get a chance?
You know,
maybe they felt like he gave him one, and he's played 8 snaps, and 2 of them he views as they were screwed up.
Yeah, Tate almost feels like a backup quarterback in college to me. Like, we've seen Cody Core's flaws. We haven't necessarily seen Auden Tate. Now, obviously, he ran a route not as deep as he should, so that's an easy ding for a coach. But he caught the ball. Cody Core has, what's he got? He's got 10 targets on the season. I think he's dropped 4 of them.
Yeah, in critical spots against Pittsburgh in particular.
Right.
2 drops.
So, you know, I think it's easy for the fans certainly to latch on and say, why isn't Auden Tate playing? It's quite clear, though, that Marvin is.
Marvin thinks he stinks.
Thinks he stinks.
Obviously. That was one step away from when he called, when we asked about Moritz Boehringer, Mobo, back in the middle of the offseason because he was here on the exchange. And he basically said, professional football is not for everyone, was how he referred to a question about Mobo. This was not that, but it's like the one step before that of he is on the practice squad for a reason. And, you know, that's fine. If that's their evaluation, if that's what they feel like they've seen, that's fine. I know what I saw in the offseason program and in training camp, and I know they were in a spot where I felt like you needed to start seeing if you had other options. That's fine. It's his team. That's his decision to make. And it ended how it ended. So, I'm not going to go into that anymore. I just thought it was interesting to hear that side of thing. Let me go into this, and this is an important topic, and then we'll get into Bill Lazor and the offense and some things. Marvin Lewis's seat is heating up. I don't think there's any doubt about that, because the way they started the season, it was sort of like everyone was feeling the optimism. Everyone's seeing this 2-year window, whatever. It was seemed like things were on the right track. The roster was young. Guys were trending forward. They've had a lot of injuries, and perhaps that will be the difference at the end of the day. And we know this was a 2-year deal, but I don't know that I totally buy that, where it being a 2-year deal. I think no deal is a 2-year deal in this league. The move with Terrell Austin felt desperate. Hugh is in the building now. All of this. We now get into this stretch of games where they have to win, or we have to, or we're going to be back where we were last year, dealing with these questions and dealing with this decision from Mike Brown.
I think I like that you're getting out in front of this, because I was going to say, if they lose Sunday,
right,
that's where the whole thing turns into a disaster.
Right. You lose to the Browns. Really, that's the problem here. You have a load of a couple of home games here, 3 home games here coming up that you will be favored against teams that have not been great. Denver will be the best amongst them. You lose any of those in front of your home fans with so much on the line, it is a bad look. You'll be doing it in front of an owner looking at a half-empty stadium, and we know the history with this, 16 years, plenty of opportunities to get out. We know their relationship. We know everything. We know what happened last year. The empty stadiums are, they speak to Mike.
It's obvious, and it is awkward.
Yeah.
But listen, a few weeks ago, we were calling these games should wins, mm-hmm, and just moving on. Now we're calling them can't lose.
Right.
And that's sort of how the perception has changed.
Yeah, there's no margin for error. There's really no margin for error. They have to go right now. It's a race now, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Before, it was not a race. Now it's a race, apparently. They should start running now.
It feels like they were already in a race. It feels like they've stopped running.
Yeah.
Like the race was already ongoing.
So it's how do you look? There's no way you can look at this Cleveland game. They seem to have gotten a bounce off of Hugh leaving. You know, they beat up on Atlanta.
Baker's learning every day.
Baker is the best of the rookie quarterbacks right now.
Nick
Chubb. He certainly can do more than Lamar Jackson. Nick Chubb is kind of doing some things. You know, they beat the Ravens.
And They tied the Steelers.
It's not like this is going to be what it has been the last few years at all. Everyone knows that. The chances of losing one of those games is very, very real. And if you lose the one at home, and now you lose 5 of 6, if you give up a bunch of yards to Baker Mayfield when you took over the defense, even for Mike Brown, I think it starts getting real.
You think they'll put in a little read option for Baker after what happened last
week?
Why
wouldn't you?
He ran it at Oklahoma.
How would any team not trot some package out there against these guys like that?
Right. And, you know, look, it's not like the Lamar Jackson thing, obviously he's an athlete on a different level at the quarterback position than they're going to see 99% of the time. But they just played New Orleans the week before, who have a quarterback that has a package very similar.
Taysom Hill, and took him all over the place with it. Cam Newton took him all over the place with it. Lamar Jackson. They cannot stop the run. But the point is, this is where it would get ugly.
Right.
It's going to go. They're either going to get back in it or it's going to get ugly.
I tried to take you down an option read.
No,
read option tangent.
I know, you did.
I did. I veered.
You did. I held my gap.
You held. Yeah, that's right.
I stayed disciplined.
You kept leverage.
I kept my leverage. You got to stay in the right leverage. Yeah. That's all. Can I not hear about leverage after a game anymore? How about make a damn play?
I did it. You didn't have the discipline.
I did not have the discipline because then it got me thinking about it. Might have had bad eyes. I don't want to hear about eyes.
Your eye discipline.
I want to hear about leverage. Make the damn play. And I know that's part of making the play or whatever, but it's just unbelievable. I mean, they are on pace to run 226 more defensive plays than offensive plays this year. It's like 4 games worth. You are not going to win games when the unit that is capable of scoring points is on the field for 4 less games.
Right.
I just feel like I'm not a math major. Not my thing. Can Hugh help? Hugh! Is that bad?
Hugh confirms.
Hugh confirms that's bad. I don't think my point being with this whole thing, and we'll move on. This is not some foregone 2-year conclusion, I don't think. Because, you look at what could happen in half empty stadiums. And the optics, you know, sort of leave this front office with nowhere to go. And we know the history, but I'm just saying there's a lot on the line right now as far as that, especially when now Hugh's here and you start thinking they do have a different option.
Right.
And I know that doesn't make fans happy either. But.
That's an interesting conversation maybe for after if they lose to the Browns.
Yeah.
For if there was a transition to Hugh.
Yeah. If that is.
But look, there's so much emotional capital just being spent here. Like last week this Ravens game was like, this is the moment of the season. And now it's shifted to this Browns game. And I feel like these are situations obviously that the Bengals they've played tight in. It's almost, to me, a good thing that Marvin's the defensive coordinator in these situations, because maybe it kind of gets him focused more on that one thing instead of being the overseer that sort of
tightening
the team
it up
tight.
Maybe Hugh can loosen things up. I don't know about any of that.
It's a theory.
Speaking of the way people are feeling, I do want to bring in Bill Lazor and talking a little bit about the offense. In particular, he kind of went down a road of pointing out how the frustration is mounting and how that's now an obstacle that they're really dealing with here right now. This was us sitting down with Bengals offense coordinator Bill Lazor. I was talking about the total plays thing, kind of going down that road, and he pointed out from an offensive standpoint what they're dealing with mentally right now. So anyway, here's Bill Lazor a little bit on frayed nerves.
You guys have obviously run a lot fewer plays on offense than the defensive side of the ball. When you aren't getting that many plays, how challenging is that for you? Because you don't feel like you're ever getting a lot of your game plan out there. Has that been a hard thing for you to get game rhythm when the plays are 43 or 50 or whatever?
Well, we'll take the responsibility on ourselves. It's our job to make first downs, and we can make it so that we keep the ball when we get it. That's number one. And number two is everyone, I think, players and coaches both, have to fight the urge to press or get out of your element because you feel the pressure that if this drive doesn't score, we got problems. And so for players, what does that mean? Just do your technique the right way every time, no matter what, and don't get frustrated, because everyone is frustrated. That is just a fact. Everyone is frustrated. Everyone's nerves are a little bit frayed right now. Everyone is searching, but the answer is just to do it right. For the coaches, it's start with the plan that we went in with, and then just be open as you go. Does the plan have to adjust? And sometimes, most games, there's going to be some adjustments as you go, and you hope you have enough on the play sheet to make those adjustments. I think the frustration over how we got to 5-5 in the last so many games is real, and we talked about it as an offense today. And you can't let it affect how you play. You got to just do it the right way and trust each other. And that was part of Coach Lewis's message. I thought it was perfect for the offense to hear it, and that's what we'll do going forward. We got to take it on ourselves to make it go the other way.
So there's Bill Lazor. This is what happens to teams. We've already seen it here. Where Terrell Austin loses his job. When guys start losing their jobs, people start feeling bitter. People start taking sides. People start pointing fingers. People start getting agitated. Chemistry goes out the window. And chemistry had been such a big part of this team's momentum early in the year. People were believing they were going to win. We talked a lot about the belief that was building in the building. And you get a couple of times when they don't, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, the most notable, that are difference makers, and some of that goes away, and you get these nerves and you get these frustrations. And players are pretty good at moving on more than you'd think, but I think them loosening up and just playing football down the stretch is really one of the biggest mental hurdles that they're gonna face. You could argue, and I would argue this, I did argue this, that last year the reason they won those last two games, the reason was because all the pressure came off and they played loose and played football again.
Right.
They played hard. There were other factors. There were a number of factors in that. They looked like a different team because they were able to breathe. Sometimes they're being suffocated by their head coach, and they need to breathe and play football and have fun. Players say that to us all the time. We just got to get back to having fun. You should be having fun all the time. And I know it's not fun when you lose. I think that's part of what Bill's referring to. Not worrying about all the other stuff. Go out there, have a good time. Play the piano. Do your celebrations. Like that that kind of stuff is good. So I think they need to not let all the stuff that we just spent 20 minutes talking about get to them, right?
Yeah, I agree. But I don't think that that's possible right now, given, like I said, every game is the biggest game of the season.
Yeah, but I know that's but how the players is. Look at it differently, yeah. Though. Players are just like, I'm just going to go play. Every game is big for a player. These guys are playing for their livelihood. Granted, as they get big at the end of the season, I think some of the huge games they know.
Yeah.
But for a lot of these players, it's only a big game if they're told it is, if it's in their face. So it's, you know, just you got to find ways to keep these guys relaxed. And maybe that's what Marv was trying to do with his encouragement garbage after the game.
Boy, everybody was on that.
It was ridiculous. Don't give me a poop sandwich and tell me it's delicious ice cream. Don't. That annoys me. But I get it. He's looking out for the next X number of games, the next X games, and trying to keep his team not thinking that this was the end of the world, even though this was a disastrous L. I get that. But it annoys me. And it annoys fans. And it annoyed Doc. Which he made clear in his column, which I rather enjoyed. I want to get into some logistics here real quick, and that means going to our good friends over at Pro Football Focus, Austin Gale, who has some good stuff this week on more of the Bengals defense issues and kind of pointing out the perpetrators and some Baker Mayfield stuff. Anyway, so let's bring that in, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the Bengals defense. So anyway, here is our man Austin Gale over at Pro Football Focus.
All right, it is that time of the show. We go to our great friends over at Pro Football Focus, and over the Rhine, that means we bring in my friend and yours, Austin Gale. Austin, how are we doing?
Doing great, man. Doing great.
Awesome. Well, it is, you know, there's a lot of interesting things that come out of it. You sort of have to put them in a separate bucket from this Baltimore game because the Ravens' offense was so different than what really they'll see the rest of the year. But on the defensive side, the new Bengals defense under Marvin Lewis, snap counts, placement of players, personnel alterations. What did you notice when you guys went through all those numbers from maybe things that Marvin was doing differently as far as who was playing, where they were playing, things like that on Sunday?
Oddly enough, Sam Hubbard moved a little bit closer to the edge in this one. He played a little bit shading more towards the tackle. He wasn't completely playing edge defender most of the time, but he was playing less inside than he was the weeks prior, something we talked about on last week's show. I think that's an exciting sign, and he actually turned it one of his better performances of the year. I mean, he had four pressures, which tied to the team lead, and really played a lot better than what we've seen when he's going against guards and centers and playing the interior like he's not really fit to do. And I think, I'm not sure if it was Hugh Jackson or whoever came in and made that switch, but I think it was a good switch in terms of getting him back to where he's at his best or closer to where he's at his best. And I thought that was promising. I think you look elsewhere on that defensive side of the ball, they're excited to see Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap still being able to generate pressures against a very good Baltimore offensive line. However, it was really the run defense and the continued struggle of the linebacking core in coverage that really led to this one, you know, going away. I mean, you look at Jordan Evans and Hardy Nickerson, Vontaze Burfict, not, you know, those guys really haven't been able to keep pace with anybody in coverage. You look at them on the year, Bengals linebackers have allowed more yards and more touchdowns, or not more touchdowns, more first downs than any other linebacking core in the NFL. They've allowed 63 first downs. The team that's allowed the second most, 48. It's become a clear-cut weakness for this defense, and I think other teams are picking on it every week.
Yeah, and it helps explain, really, when you get back to the core of what has sent this season in a spiral, their third down defense has been a disaster, and all it is other teams dropping back and targeting the linebackers into coverage and targeting them and beating them because they can't cover a lick. Let's talk about on the offensive side of the ball. What were some of the, you know, the run game not good? Tyler Boyd, seeing all kinds of coverage. But what stuck out, for you on the offensive side of the ball for the Bengals?
This offense is really struggling, though despite the ascent of Tyler Boyd to replace AJ Green, which is easier said than done and obviously not something you'd expect a Bengals team to really be capable of. But he was such an important piece to this offense. He really got Tyler Boyd open, he allowed other receivers to get open, he allowed the run game to have more success just because of how much attention he draws. And you see Tyler Boyd getting double covered here and there, they're not able to feed him, forcing it to go other places that simply aren't as talented. You know, yes, John Ross has come on as of late, but he's not AJ Green, he's not really that guy that can bring this offense to the next level. I mean, you look at the offensive line. I think Cordy Glenn, you know, he allowed the team high pressures on Sunday against Baltimore, has really struggled. He's had a really up and down season, and you brought him in to be this stalwart top 10, top 15 offensive tackle, and he really hasn't been. And he factored that in with the, you know, elsewhere along the offensive line. Billy Price didn't have his best day. It's tough for Dalton to really have success, Joe Mixon to have success, when the offensive line, despite its investment, has continued to struggle.
Yeah, it's been the issue all year, where they as their whole, they've kept some of the sack numbers down, and they for the most part were having success running the ball. But against a team like Baltimore, so big and so disruptive up front, they don't seem to be able to find other ways to get the run game going. Let's flip it forward to the Browns game real quick. We've talked about the Bengals run defense, which now has given up 198 yards at least in a game four times this year, including 265 this past week against Baltimore. And here comes the Browns. They run the ball really well, but really the question about whether they'll be successful will probably come back to what will be the question about whether they'll be successful for the next number of years. That's Baker Mayfield. What have you guys seen in the deeper look at how he's actually playing this year? You know, obviously the Browns don't have as many wins, but as far as how he's playing, what do you guys have? What do they say about it?
Baker Mayfield is the highest graded rookie signal caller this season, and it's not even close. The way he's been able to pick up the NFL in stride is truly incredible, especially given how much that offensive line has struggled. It's really been bad, and when he's been under pressure on 40-plus percent of his dropbacks, he's turned in some bad performances. But you look back to 2 weeks ago against Atlanta, he had a career game and was passing from the clean pocket more often than not, and really shredded that Atlanta Falcons defense. And look at his accuracy on intermediate and deep throws. Some of the best in the NFL win passing from a clean pocket. His wide receiving core has dropped more passes than any other quarterback's wide receiving core in the NFL. He's putting the ball where it needs to be, very accurate. It's just the talent around him needs to get better. The offensive line needs to get better. Receivers need to get better. And now he's got this run game going. I think he's coming off a career game against Atlanta. Then you have the bye to readdress issues, get healthy. This is a very scary Baker Mayfield coming in against Cincinnati. I think he is playing his best football right now. And if the offensive line can stay long, Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap, he's going to tear up the Bengals linebackers all day long.
Yeah, potentially a bad mismatch. And really, you're right. You know, like most things with the Browns right now, this is going to come back to this Bengals defensive front. Those guys, 110 mil up front, going to have to earn it for sure, because they're the ones they need most to keep Baker from getting that comfortable pocket rhythm where he's proven that he can kind of tear you up with his accuracy. All right, Austin, thank you so much. Lots of games early this week, so people need to know to give a football focus. Get to the green line so you can get that money on Thursday, so you can hit Black Friday up and take advantage of it. So do that. Obviously, Edge, Elite, still there. And you'll want it in the offseason because people start to talk draft now. Teams are tanking. You guys have incredible draft coverage. Lots of good stuff on the college game and the guys that are coming out, too. So you may think the season's starting to wind down. It's actually where you guys are. It's just kicking up.
Absolutely. Look at the Bengals team. It's playoff hopes do go away. Our draft coverage is very exciting. We look at all the college players. Good to get the draft guide early. Definitely subscribe to Edge and Elite.
All right. Thanks, Austin. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Okay. Much thanks to Austin over at PFF. Everyone at PFF for the stuff they do is great. And yeah, I know. I'm not taking draft questions yet, but you can get draft answers by going over to and starting to dig into their college stuff over there. When the Bengals are eliminated, we'll start talking about the draft. We have so much time to talk about the draft. Probably going to have a decent pick again. So we'll see. Maybe it all turns around. It's all turning around. Hey, the last few years, this has been the strategy. Browns come to town. Get right. Get right. So let's chat a little bit about the run defense situation, which is going to be huge for this week against the Browns. And then obviously in a few weeks at the Browns. The Browns only do one thing well. One thing really well on offense, statistically. They are a top 10 efficiency and total rush yardage team. Everything else has not. But Baker's had moments, you know, but their receivers are bad. Their offensive line struggles with some of the stuff that Austin was just talking about. So it's going to be a matter of them coming out and running the football with Nick Chubb. I mean, they've been really good at this.
They have. And a couple things that I wanted to – I'm still digging into all this, but before I got here, you saw some games with the Colts and Ravens. So the first two games of the season, Colts rushed for 75 against the Bengals. Ravens only rushed for 66 yards. And I think a key to that, and you can correct me, is that the Bengals were playing ahead.
Yes.
So they started fast.
Part of, yeah, they were – yeah, the Indy game not as much. Baltimore, obviously, yeah, but – yes, that was part of it.
And so, but then we start seeing sort of the cracks. I mean, obviously, Cam Newton and that offense, that was brutal, 230 yards. Atlanta was 92 yards. Again, I felt like that was because the Bengals started fast. They played ahead.
Right.
But since then, I mean, it's just the rush defense for Cincinnati has just been bad.
They are worst efficiency in the league. 32nd in yards per carry.
And they're
allowed.
Headed for – I don't know how many times I've typed in the Marvin Lewis era.
Right.
But they're headed for in the National Football League ever,
mm-hmm.
that sentence when it comes to games allowing 198 or more.
Right. Yeah. So they've got four of those now.
Kansas City, Carolina, the Saints, and then the Ravens. So I think a lot of this – obviously everything's connected. Your defense is on the field more because the offense hasn't started fast, can't convert on third down, and you just, like you said, they're playing so many more plays than they should be.
Yep. But,
so, I mean, this is it. They got to stop the Chubb.
Suppress the Chubb is where we're at. That's with what this it's team right be. Now. They've got it. They have. I think it is literally. I mean, it is how this game will be decided. I mean, if they cannot, because. If the Browns are able to do that, Baker will be effective in some spots if they're just run gashing.
He was 17 of 20 against Atlanta. Now, I know Atlanta's right. defense is not the measuring
because it was
stick.
Because they focused right. on running the football and did it effectively. The Bengals' defense worse than the Falcons' defense? They're both dumpster fires. How hot are they? I don't know. At a certain point, you know, how many degrees are we going? What's the difference between 282 degrees and 272 degrees? I don't know. It's all hot. You're all burning. Everybody dying.
Don't feel good.
It's hot. I mean, that's what the Browns are. And that's what they're, I think, clearly what Greg Williams wants them to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they freed it up so Chubb can take over and be the guy. And it was effective for them. So, and how could they not look at this Bengals defense and say, here's how we win. We give it to Nick Chubb. We do what we need against Atlanta, and we'll be good.
Right.
Let's recreate.
And then you mix in the most accurate quarterback in college history with Baker to have right. that to play with.
And he's been a lot of that, especially those intermediate throws, which the Bengals linebackers.
That's what I was going to say. The reason why I picked the Ravens correctly. To win the game last week, I am on a heater right now.
You are
when it comes to it.
You are on a heater
because I nailed. The
I believe
Bucks,
everyone that we've
Saints.
Had different opinions on.
Oh yeah, it feels
you've
so
gone negative and I've gone positive and I've been burnt to a crisp.
I've been telling you, man.
I know why. I don't know why. I don't know why.
Sun ain't shining.
Why have I been so optimistic? Perhaps this is the one where I start predicting the spiral.
Well,
I have not decided yet, but some of these matchups are concerning.
But the Bengals have what they have at that linebacker spot. Tez, we don't have to talk about that. But Hardy Nickerson played every play
How
against
about that
the Ravens.
Call?
And Vinny Ray, you know, I think I like Vinny. I think he's a good
great
guy.
Great guy. This is the end.
Good in the locker room. And Jordan Evans is just not quite –
Hasn't done – yeah,
right.
He's regressed this year.
And so that linebacker core against Lamar Jackson, I was like, I don't know what Lamar is, but I think I know what that linebacker core is.
Right.
And so same thing here, like, it's just
– Yeah, it's –
That's the spot.
That's going to be concerning. You know, and offensively, you'd like to think that they should be able to run up some points, but, you know, I think this will end up coming down to what Nick Chubb's stat line is, I think, probably. That's my guess.
I think so. And for all this, we're having so much more fun now with Marv calling plays and everything. Dre Kirkpatrick did say when we asked about, you know, not being able to stop Lamar, he said, he's not my concern. That's more the linebackers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty clear there. And then he also said, again, he said, I'm not a linebacker, so I can't really speak for those guys. So it's obvious.
You know what that is? That's the bony finger of blame.
That's right. Well, that's covering your own backside, and then that's extending the bony finger of blame.
Extending the bony finger of blame to somebody else. I mean, I think everyone knows that the linebackers have been bad. They missed. Nick Vigil is not a Pro Bowl player. He's not an All-Pro player. He was a pretty good player when he was healthy this year. He seemed to be taking a step, and they miss him badly because nobody makes a play. And I don't know that they're going to get Nick back this week. We'll see again. That would be speculating. Can I talk about the bony finger of blame real quick?
I do want to talk about it. First of all, did you Google that phrase?
No, is that a real thing?
Well, that's what I wanted to see. It's like, where is that something that what's the point of origin here? Is that just the Harbaughs, who are known for their zany, you know, what, quirkiness?
Chemical imbalance.
Right, or that. Is that his way of, you know, sort of using alliteration?
For people that don't know this, he used it discussing the Vontaze Burfict, Marshall Yanda spit situation, pointing out that he's not going to point the bony finger of blame on somebody who you don't know intent, and that he, and talking about other things. But anyway, he used that phrase. Did you find anything on it?
It's on the internet a little bit, but I can't find the point of origin.
So perhaps it's just a thing that John Harbaugh has invented.
Well, I think I have spent a lot of time thinking about why people use the words they use. I was like, does the bony finger, would that indicate like maybe an older person who's wise and, you know, has the wisdom to be able to
cast the finger's just more noticeable due to the erosion of skin. So you see it, it's straighter, and it's more obviously, maybe you look at it and you're like, ugh, that's an ugly-ass finger. Yeah, because you know, when you're blaming somebody, you're doing something ugly. So the finger's bony and disgusting.
Okay.
It's old.
So he's just...
I don't know. This is my... I'm trying to work
through this. He's throwing shade on people who throw shade. He's saying, I'm not going to be that.
Be a shade thrower. I'm just going to tell you that Marshall Yanda didn't do this.
No. That's not even it, though. He said, I'm not going to point the bony finger of blame, but let me tell you what Vontaze did.
Right.
That's what he did.
That if you watch the whole... Do you have that quote?
I do.
Can you read it just...
Well, first he said, are you really seriously asking that question, is what he started with, I believe. And then he says,
Monday.
He says, I'm not going to stand up here and say 55 did it on purpose, because I'm not going to point the bony finger of blame, and I don't know what somebody's intentions are. So for all those quote-unquote journalists out there that think that they somehow inherited the position to judge another man's character when they don't know his intention, we don't give that any consideration whatsoever. None. It's not worth it. Kind of an indication of where our society is going right now.
This started the video of it showed up on the internet and circulated, and then it was asked about, and the Ravens were like, what are you talking about? He didn't spit on anybody. And if you look at the video, you see spit come out. He sort of does a weird wave of his hand at the bottom, like he was trying to stop it. But I don't know if he's trying to stop it. Here's what I don't care. Here's why I don't care. And I'm going to give you some background on this and sort of a decision that we made. We have been in the business of judging intent for so damn long with things where 55 has been on the other side of this. And I get sick of it. And I'm tired. We don't know intent. And it's not going to matter because the NFL is not going to do anything. The Ravens are like, this is not a thing. And so in the big picture, it means nothing. It's going to be a he said, he said. Vontaze walked by me in the locker room. I was in the corner just BSing with CJ Uzama and Andy Dalton. And we're just talking. And oh, I have my back to the locker room, and Tez walks by behind me, taps me on the shoulder, and says, you need to write that story. That dude spit on me. And I said, oh, really? And he kept right on walking. And he was gone. And I didn't write that. We can talk about it here because it's a thing that happened. But it's a matter of, it's back to the original core where we're usually talking about Tez on the other side. Like, and we... typically, and unless it looks like the NFL is going to get involved, and they often with him do, are always in this position of judging intent. And I got out of that game. I haven't done that with stuff that he's done this year. I haven't written about it except when he was fined the $112K. And I'm not going to do it going the other way. And did he step on him? And did he mean to step on him? And did Yanda mean to spit on him? I don't know, and it doesn't matter in the big picture. It's just more garbage that's always out there in these games.
And here's the other part of that Harbaugh interaction. He said, go back and look at the whole video. Marshall is on the ground, and his arm gets stepped on by number 55. I'm not going to say 55 did it on purpose because I'm not going to point the bony finger of blame when I don't know what someone's intentions are. So I wasn't clear as if maybe he was talking about a different play, because I've watched that play quite a few times, and it's really hard to tell what's going on. There's so many bodies.
Yeah, and maybe he has different video than we do. I don't know. Right. The other coach's tapes might have something. I don't know. It gets into this weird area. And if he did spit, maybe he did. But I can't prove it. You can't prove it. They're denying it. Vontaze Burfict telling me to write a story about it. Can't prove it. And I can't prove that Tez stepped on his arm. Marshall Yanda and John Harbaugh can't. And they can't point the bony finger of blame because you don't know. No one knows about any of this crap. And it all doesn't matter because no one's getting fined. No one's getting suspended. It's not going to affect a damn thing except get me all riled up.
And then at the end of it, John Harbaugh is essentially just blaming the media for the whole thing.
Yeah. Media creation is where society's going.
Right.
Fine. Anyway, that's that. We need a injection of positivity here right now, because that got me in a bad place. So let's go to Optimistic Bobby. We need him. And you all need him right now.
That's right.
And his takes are important. So let's bring in Optimistic Bobby, Bobby Slattery from 50 West, our good friends over at 50 West, and try to bring out the optimism. Pulse of the Optimistic fan. You need it. We need it. Everyone needs it.
All right. You know, when the fan base has to suffer 4 out of 5 L's and a tough one in Baltimore, there's really only one thing that we can do. We've got to turn to my friend, Bobby Slattery, over at 50 West, owner of 50 West, otherwise known, needed Optimistic Bobby. How are we doing?
Hootay! Stronger than ever! One of the strongest. We're still on track. The season prediction is still in line, thanks to a sneaky Atlanta Falcons win that you didn't predict. But we're right there. We're right in the playoff picture.
You are. It's a bit hairier now. with a lot of, you got the Ravens now also at 5-5. The surging Colts right there. The Titans are in it. There's just a lot of company sitting there. Why? So you just feel like this team is totally still going to pull this off?
Look, you know my opinion. Until we get to what's the ninth loss,
yeah,
or mathematically eliminated, anything can happen. I mean, we're right there. I mean, we're 5-5. If your season prediction, which I am, I've told you this before, I'm reading that like the almanac from Back to the Future and believe it 100% to be true.
Okay.
So, you know, we have the exact same record that you had predicted at this point in time. But my hope is we're going to go into the game in Pittsburgh and win. And that's where the almanac's going to be flipped. And everything from that point forward in life will be wonderful.
Well, I was going to say, because in my prediction, it ends with you guys not making the playoffs.
I know. Look, here, I'm optimistic, all right? So I have hope. So my plan is you get to the Pittsburgh game, and then that's where, you know, the world reverses itself and everything becomes wonderful. So as long as we're right there, I mean, that's where I want to be. I want to go into that Pittsburgh game with
9-6. You need to go in 9-6, probably. I mean,
it's 2 wins at Cleveland. It's an Oakland win. It's a Denver win.
Which
I think are all doable things. Now that we got all the secrets, Hugh has come and he knows the ins and outs of Cleveland and how they can lose.
I assume you love the Hugh move. I have to. I only assume that you thought that was great.
It was great. Of course I was excited about it. I mean, I don't know how it's a bad thing. I think that's the better question, is how is the Hugh move a bad thing? It's just
you know, there's nothing bad coming out of it. He didn't, you know, some people were upset about it, I guess, but you're just adding somebody that knows a lot about a team you have to play twice to your coaching staff.
Indeed.
So,
yeah, and you know, that all the secrets about Baker Mayfield. I mean,
all
you know,
of Baker Mayfield. I know.
All the Baker secrets. Everything you need to know. So who knows? All I know is this. If, and you probably don't even think that this is even a possibility, if this team were to lose to the Browns on Sunday at home,
man.
This could send a spiral that you might be the last man on the bandwagon. Like, you might be alone on the bus.
I don't even want to think about that. I could be the only one left there. There's a few
place.
More than
That's
you would think.
It's a dark place.
It's a dark place. I don't want to be you if that happens.
No.
Lots of questions to answer on Twitter. Lots of anger.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm going to go off of, you know, things that make me believe that's not going to happen. John Ross making a contested catch in that game.
Yeah.
How about that?
Miracles. Miracles.
I mean,
I'm telling you. That could be a major turning point for John Ross.
I felt like he looked different afterwards. I really did. He looked like a completely different player.
Yeah.
So
he still only caught two balls, which they probably need him to do more. But when AJ comes back, he's the third weapon. It's amazing how when you go down, you push it down the line, and it's like, okay, now they're not doubling Tyler Boyd every play. Now John Ross is sort of like your third guy.
Who learned how to make contested catches. I know.
Right.
Nothing but optimism.
AJ comes back, and the defense, you know, gave up 100 less yards than they did the weeks before.
I love that.
I hoped that I would get that optimistic take from you. Look, 100 less. 100 less than they did the previous game. Oh, it's great. Bobby, I'm excited. I'm excited that you're still as on board as ever.
It's the holidays, right? How exciting is it to go into Thanksgiving and still care about football and get to be with your family? And it's just, there's nothing but good things, good vibes happening. You know, and the Bengals giving back to the community, with the deal. I mean, that's a good thing.
The county deal was great. We talked a lot about that last week with Jason Williams. I thought that was shocking and something they were, you know, good corporate citizens.
Hey, the Bengals are good. Let's stop the Bengals are bad. You know, it's a good thing for the community. Life is good, and for all you Bengals fans out there, just remain. It's all about getting hot at the right time, right? And we're in the middle of the season right now. We got 6 games left to play. Let's just hope, you know, by the end of those 6 games, we're playing better than ever. We're healthier than ever, and we go into the playoffs and take out a win, and Marvin can ride off into the sunset and see who gets to be the next coach.
Even the optimistic fans are like, yeah, he's probably going to be the next coach. I love it. What's going on out at 50 West? You guys doing anything for the busiest bar night of the year?
Of course. We got tap takeovers all over the place. But big thing, here's the thing for the holidays. This is our first holiday where you can bring 50 West home with you, right? Cans weren't available last Thanksgiving. So hit up your local Kroger or your local bottle shop and bring some Coast to Coast or Doom Pedal or Lager or Punch in the IPA home. And then we have a special can release. We've got a Lemon Frosty IPA coming out on Saturday, so we'll be releasing that out of the tap room.
Ooh, how long will that be out?
It depends. Sometimes it lasts a day, sometimes it lasts a month. It just depends on how many people show up and what happens from there. So
I've got to come down to the Pro Works to get it.
You can come down to Pro Works. It opens at 12 o'clock on Saturday. So
okay,
you can swing down.
Can you set a 6-pack aside for me?
I always do, Paul. I always.
Okay.
Do.
All right. Because
you're going to be able to.
A Lemon Frosty IPA sounds like
you know how good it's
like.
You know how
with my taste buds in mind, I want this.
Here's what I'm going to ask though. Don't drink it until Sunday after the Bengals victory over the Browns. It tastes better. It always tastes better after a Bengals victory.
Okay. Okay. If the Bengals win, I promise that I will drink it when I get home from the game Sunday night. If they lose, I will give it to a BVP listener who needs it.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. All right. All right. Oh, and don't forget good. For the Bengals, our tailgate is happening right now.
Yeah.
You got to go to it. It is. Ken Anderson's been there. We've got a look for the 50 West tent in Lot D. Swing over. We got plenty of beer, plenty of food, lots of optimistic Bengals fans present. So if you're going down to the Cleveland game on Sunday, be sure to check that out.
I like it. Lot D, 50 West. 50 West beer. Go and get, drink at the stadium, too.
It's great. I know. Get in the state. I know. It's we're really doing it, Paul. We're all grown up.
All right. Well, let's hope that, you know, we're not in a dark place, not giving 50 West frosty lemons away next week, or else we'll have to. We'll definitely be calling you back in to help people cope.
You got it. I'm here. I'm here for look until we're until that ninth loss. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. So remain positive, Bengals fans. Life is good, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there.
There we go. Yeah, to you too. To you and yours. We will talk with you soon.
Hootay.
Okay. I love hearing from Bobby. I am excited about the Hazy Lemon IPA seasonal. I'm going to have to go down there and get that six-pack set aside for me. And I mean that. Bengals lose against the Browns, I will give that six-pack away to a listener. We'll come up with a contest or something like that. Because you need it. Because you need it. Otherwise, I'm drinking it Sunday night. Probably all six of them. All right, let's move forward. Okay, so the Jurassic Park analogy is really coming into focus now. I'm excited about this. So here's where we've been, right? We determined that Terrell Austin at the midpoint with his historically bad defense was bringing up the fact that he did it in 2015 with the Lions, where he had a terrible defensive first half and a very good defensive second half, was when they had to shut the power down and the blinking cursor on the screen. And he said, well, look, that's hope. We're still very bad. Lots of dinosaurs are probably going to eat people in this movie, but at least there's hope. All we got to do is walk across and go turn the switch back on and we'll be fine. And then he went over to turn the switch back on, and what happened? He got eaten. His arm came flying off. It was very bad. So Terrell got eaten. He gone now. Here's where I think we're at. So I think we're at – you look like you have a thought as well.
No, keep it going.
Okay.
I'm just inspired by your
passion.
Here's
where I think we're at in the Jurassic Park analogy. I think after this loss is when the kids – have reunited, and so when the girl is shaking, the spoon is shaking, right, and the Jell-O is shaking, because she sees the shadow of the like raptors and knows that they're here and they're coming in. That's where we're at. You see the spiral, like, okay, these games are now scary. You see the direction things are going. You see the bony finger of blame. You see all these things happening. And you, right now, this point in the season is the shaking Jell-O moment of Jurassic Park. You know what happens next? They run into the kitchen.
Great scene.
Right. If they lose, it is the equivalent. That is the moment when the raptor opens the door. That is where we would be at. When the raptor learns how to open the doors is where we would be at.
So in this analogy, though, somehow the Cleveland Browns have become raptors.
There's two of them.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
There's two raptors. They work together. You lose either of those two games to the Browns, they click the door open, and now they're in, and they're going to eat the kids. But they... obviously, in Jurassic Park, they don't.
They get out of the kitchen.
They do get out of the kitchen by miracles, which
it could take on Sunday.
We shall see. So
this
anyway,
is good.
So this, I feel like we're at the shaking Jell-O moment. So if you're listening to this, we know you guys have been so good on the Twitters of firing us stuff off, so much so that we had to do the entire post on the tandem bikes. Which God bless you guys are the best.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Dude, the tandem bike and the ET with Hugh God, it was so good.
Look, I know everybody says our country's really divided right now, but in those moments, I'm like, no.
Come together.
We are in this together. We can work together.
We can. I feel like if we could be some sort of coping mechanism as a family, as a family of people that are having to deal with this, that is, it's special. It makes us stronger in the long run. So anyway, send me your shaking Jell-O. If you could put Marv's face on the girl, I feel like that might work.
Or Baker Mayfield's face.
Baker Mayfield on the Raptors. Look, you guys do your thing.
Yeah.
You guys are good. I've set the baseline. Feel free to use your creative juices.
Execute.
Today in Kanye, what do we got?
All right, a couple things. This is an actual story on an actual website. Here's the headline. Kanye West flashes rare smile as he steps out solo while leaving Hotel Bel Air in bright red Carhartt jacket. That's a story. There's words after that.
There's more to it?
There's sentences and paragraphs about that. I mean, the Carhartt jacket.
Is that the centerpiece of the story?
It's nice.
I feel like I've seen him in the Carhartt jacket before.
Yeah, that's an interesting rich
man. So the story is Kanye
man.
Smiles in Carhartt jacket.
It is. And he just seems upbeat. Now, I took this a step further. Now, when you Google Kanye West, there are 169 million results come up in 0.52 seconds. Now, I took the time to Google Paul Daner Jr. Inquirer.
Oh, God.
How many results do you think pop up?
Oh, please.
You're going to be surprised.
Please be less than 100.
It's 23,100 results. So you're out there,
man. It's mostly tweets.
You're out there. But so your Google power, I'm going to put that at 23,000.
Mm-hmm.
Kanye
not quite
is at
Kanye.
169 million.
I'm getting there.
So you just got a little work to put in.
I'm going to keep tweeting about Auden Tate.
Grow it organically. The grassroots movement, you can get there.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to know. And then before you know it, people will be tweeting, Daner smiles on way out of Inquirer building, wearing.
Hey, it's Christmas.
His regular
season.
Puffy jacket.
I might
get
you a Carhartt jacket.
Don't do that.
It's on the table now. If Kanye's wearing it,
that's true. They're going to be everywhere.
That's right.
Going to be in Target.
He moves markets.
He is a market mover. Anything else?
Just another crazy week for me, man. Every week we just get loaded back up, like I said, just unload all the emotional capital. And
yeah.
I gained 5 pounds in Baltimore. That's how much fun we had out
all
there.
All crab.
Yeah. I had like pounds of seafood, a few pops, yeah. And really enjoyed myself. Baltimore
is a great road trip.
It's a great road trip.
It's a great road trip. Shout out Moe's Seafood, who has delicious food. Giant pounds of crab that you can just hammer on top of scallops and calamari and wine.
Bisque. I got the seafood bisque.
I had a Caesar salad. Very good. Pickles. One of the best dive bars on the road trips. Enjoyed a couple nights and went back for the second night at Pickles after the walkout. That's when you know we're going to regret this in the morning, but we powered through and did just fine.
I found my second win. I was praying for overtime. I wanted that night.
We decided to stay
forever.
As long as the game was relevant, and this Vikings game kept getting more and more relevant, so we hung around Pickles. If you're ever in Baltimore, if you ever do the trip, the Bengals go to Baltimore every year, try to stay downtown, one of the downtown hotels. Come swim through Pickles.
Yeah,
have some beers with us.
I actually wrote Paul's phone number on the bathroom at Pickles.
For a good time?
For a good time, call this number.
That's why my phone's been blowing up today. A lot of emojis in that one. Anyway, all right. Well, anyway, so again, no Deucer this week since we're going to have Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. We love all y'all. I love this time of year on the podcast because it's the holidays and things get weird and you guys get great and it gets very entertaining as
Gift
the games
potential
get bigger.
Is high.
Gag potential is very high right now. So, anyway, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Happy Black Friday. Happy Local Business Saturday. And happy Bengals Game Day Sunday. So we've wished you all a happy day of every the holiday week. Serious about that Local Business Saturday stuff. That's huge. I'm a big Local Business Saturday guy. You got to support your local businesses. So get out. The small businesses, the local businesses, feed them. Find, go to all places. Do your Christmas shopping there. Shop local. Especially if you live in Cincinnati. You got to support our country. Hey, That's So Cincinnati still going on. Keep listening to that. Excited. You know that Jason Williams came on the Deuce last week, and we talked about the county deal. More good stuff on there. So please go subscribe, comment, listen to That's So Cincinnati. Jason and I kind of digging into local pop culture and politics and all the stuff that affects you in your everyday life. Do you get a chance for that? So we will have the walkout on Sunday. All the regular game day content that you expect. Fletcher's going to have a story on some of the run game stuff we talked about. We'll talk to Hugh! Debate of Rounds! We'll talk to Hugh! All that stuff. So keep an eye out for that this week on the site. John Ross on Beyond the Stripes. Give that a watch. Give that a listen. All that stuff. And we will talk to you again on Sunday. Have a good one.